Welcome to the North and South of Things podcast, a show dedicated to discussion of topics important to the LGBT community and the community at large. Here are your hosts, Mark and George. Hey, kids, welcome to the North and South of Things. This is George in Atlanta, and I am joined by my able co-host, Mark, in St. Paul, Minnesota. Mark, how are you?
I am fabulous, George. What are we going to be talking about today?
You know what? We're going to be talking about our viewing habits. What are we watching? I want you to think for a minute about a show or a series that you watch with considerable regularity. And tell me what that series is.
Well, it's actually something that is probably near and dear to your local economy in the film and television series called The Walking Dead.
Ah.
As a matter of fact, I just popped for, I had finished binge watching, and we're going to get to binge watching a little bit later in the show. I finished binge watching all of The Walking Dead five seasons that were available on Netflix. And as you know, last week was the first episode mid-season of the current season, season six.
Mm.
And I went and broke out my wallet, went over to Amazon and signed up for the season pass for season six. And
now that's a commitment.
It is a commitment, and I binge watched the episodes that were available from season six that started this past fall.
Wow!
And you know, it was the new season was broadcast on Sunday, and you know, I get an email basically in the middle of the night that says you have an episode waiting for you. So.
Very cool.
I'm very excited about it.
How much did you spend on that, if you don't mind?
It was $26.99, and I get the SD. I don't really need zombies in HD.
Right. I'd really like to see if that blood looks real. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, What is it
about that show that really, I mean, because that's a great example, because you are someone, as we discussed on our last podcast, doesn't subscribe to a Comcast or a DirecTV. So for you to spend money on something, you must really like it. What is it about that genre or that particular show that sort of makes you pull the trigger?
I think that, you know, it's the storyline. I think Walking Dead has been really successful of taking a theme and putting a huge story arc that is basically fueled by the characters and their relationships.
Interesting.
And that's, you know, these characters I'm invested in, I care about, I want to see what happens to them. I want to see how they solve their problems. And Walking Dead is one of those seasons where it's just, you know, I got to the end of season five and I said, oh my God, I need more. I have to have more. So, and that's when I made the decision to go ahead and buy the season pass.
So I'm embarrassed to admit that I have never watched The Walking Dead. I've watched like one episode like several years ago. And another very popular show, Breaking Bad, I've never watched it either.
I haven't seen Breaking Bad. It's on my list of things to watch, but there's so much to watch out there that it's difficult to make the decision, okay, what am I going to invest my time in?
And I feel like I'm a bit of a contrarian, because if there's a lot of people talking about it, I'm just like, I don't want to watch that. I don't want, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's some stuff I do get caught up in, Downton Abbey and Game of Thrones and others.
Mm-hmm. But Dancing with the Stars, no.
And there's a lot of it. Like, I was very late to The Big Bang Theory. I was very late to Seinfeld. I was, you know, Well, frankly, I was late to Game of Thrones. I binge watched three seasons of that, you know, in one setting, mind you. That would be suicide. But, you know, for me, I think, like you, I think it is about the storytelling. It is about the ability to use today's technology and all of the skills that folks have to bring a period piece to life. And for me, I guess my sort of thing I'm absolutely obsessed with is Game of Thrones. I went back and watched the entire series again. So I've now seen the whole thing twice. So I look forward to the next season. And I think for me, it's not only just the storytelling, but it's the vignettes and the multiple lines that go on at the same time, the subplots that go on at the same time, because that feeds into my ADHD. Because I can get real bored real quick with, you know, this particular queen or this particular, you know, warrior or whatever, if their storyline is boring. You know that you're not going to have more than, you know, 5 minutes to put up with before they switch to some other sort of subplot going on. So that's what we wanted to talk today a little bit about, is what is it about certain genres that people are connected with? And I found an article on an LA Weekly talking about, we're going to talk about two things. We're going to talk about crime dramas, which have a big fan base, and reality TV, which of course owns the world right now. And I haven't seen any numbers, so it seems like I read something last week that might suggest that reality TV is in decline. I hope that's true.
Well, it's been around for almost 30 years.
Yeah, I guess, is MTV really at fault here? Are they the one who started all this shit?
No, actually, it's my understanding that reality-based television started in the UK.
Really?
With things like Big Brother.
But now MTV's, what was that?
Well, that was the Real World.
Real World, yeah.
And that was based on models overseas.
I see. So it's UK's fault. All right.
Yes, let's blame the Brits.
Or as Robin Williams said in South Park, blame Canada. They're as closest to the UK as we have within striking distance.
That's right. We're going to have the Boston Tea Party all over again.
Right. So these two genres, crime dramas and reality TV. I found some articles that talked about what it is about both of these genres that are interesting to people and why they're caught up. And interestingly enough, the first school of thought on the crime dramas is that people who watch, let me read to the audience, the more frequently people watched nonfiction crime documentaries like The First 48, the more fearful they were about becoming a crime victim. So they were also less supportive and less confident in the criminal justice system and said they believed the national crime rate was climbing, even when it's actually not. So it's that audience, the people who live in fear of these types of crimes. Mm-hmm. And I actually know someone very close to me who is that kind of person. I shan't reveal who he or she is, but he or she sleeps with a gun under his or her pillow. and does, I think, genuinely live in fear of these kinds of things and watches these kinds of shows obsessively. Well, maybe not obsessively, watches them quite a bit.
I think humans are, you know, fascinated and by crime. In the golden radio days, there was a radio drama called Dragnet, of course, and that translated over to television as well, that were based on actual cases. And I don't know if it's kind of this voyeuristic tendency that we have, where, you know, we come across an accident on the highway and we slow down and rubberneck to see what is happening. I don't know what it is about this. that holds such a fascination, but it certainly does.
That is a great parallel, rubbernecking.
Yes.
I mean, it's you're driving down the road, you have someplace you need to be, probably in a hurry, and yet some carnage has happened. And yes, you need to drive slow to get around it, but you don't need to drive so slow that you can turn your head and look and take in the scene and understand what probably happened. And oh my God, is there anybody bleeding anywhere? Because I really want to see that. You know, that parallel with the fascination for watching crime TV shows, real fictional or not, based on, Law and Order, right? They're the ones that sort of ripped from the headlines. Mm-hmm. They is their sort of motto. I think they've got it down to a science. They take headlines, merge them together so that it's not too like any one particular story. So they can get by with the fact that it's, you know, not based on a real person's situation, but it is based on an amalgamation of real stories. But I find that as fascinating as stuff that is, you know, the first 48 hours or 2020 or whatever, what's Dateline, you know, all of those, to capture a predator, you know, especially the murder stuff. Now, I will say the murder mysteries are probably more interesting to me, especially if it's got a real tangled, complex, you know, scenario, almost like a whodunit sort of thing. I think that's interesting. So the other school of thought on this genre, another article from the Telegraph, UK website, suggests that crime dramas are actually good for your brain.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm going to read to you again. Research shows that when people are put in artificial situation with no sensory stimulation, the brain takes only 30 hours to become so distressed that they start stimulating themselves by hallucinating, which is really frightful. When those people come out of isolation experiments and are asked to undertake reasoning and memory tests, they perform worse than they did previously, before the isolation. The more you tax your brain, the sharper it will become. And this article suggests that the TV dramas really tax your brain because they're proposing some real complex hypothetical situations or real life situations that trigger certain parts of your brain that stimulate the various sensory portions of your brain, which I think is just fascinating. And I think, you know, I would probably have to fall in that category because I don't live in fear of crime. Mm-hmm. So can you think, have crime dramas been a draw for you?
They haven't been up until recently. When I was growing up, I would read a lot of science fiction. I had other friends who would also read science fiction, but they would also cross over into murder mysteries. Mm. And that really didn't hold a lot of appeal to me until Netflix has a series called The Midsummer Murder Mysteries.
Mm. Very Jack and Ripper. Jack the Ripper.
It's a UK series, and it's really quite well done in that it's kind of those classic whodunit episodes, and they're about an hour and a half to 2 hours in length. And my friends were burning through these and just kind of, you know, talking about them. So I decided to watch a few of them, and they really are quite good because we would play a game. We would sit down to watch an episode together, and you were supposed to say, you know, who did it, with what weapon, in the library, you know, kind of that clue game feel to it. And so, yeah, so you did watch the episode in such a way where you were trying to put all of these disparate pieces together to find out who had done the murder.
Let me read you, while you've got that thought right on your mind, I want to read you the rest of this piece about the brain. The more you tax your brain, the sharper it becomes. And when you watch complex TV drama, you really tax it. almost all of the visual regions of the brain are activated, starting with the primary visual cortex in the occipital lobe, where the images are first analyzed. The inferior temporal lobe kicks in to recognize objects. The parietal lobe takes care of spatial attention, that is, separating out the important parts from the image in the background. There's also a particular part of the brain, the fusiform face area, which recognizes characters' face, crucial for dramas that introduce sometimes bewildering number of suspects. The Wernicke's area of the left brain is deployed to understand the show's script. I mean, like, you really get a sense of how these crime dramas just do. I sort of play on all your senses and heighten your awareness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fascinating. Now we just beat up on the Brits for their
for reality TV.
We should give them major props because it seems like everything that comes out of the BBC is fabulous and awesome to watch.
Yes, especially things like Vicious.
Right. I was thinking more like Sherlock, but now was that was BBC, wasn't it? I'm talking about the first series with what's his name, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes, it was. I do believe that was out of the BBC.
And aren't they doing something, some sort of reboot, like some new Sherlock?
They did do one, and actually people are really not happy with it. Basically,
it's weird. It time jumps and does a lot of weird stuff. Yeah.
It puts them back in the original time frame of the original Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. It was a bit of a mind fuck for me. I was just like, wait a minute. What is going on here, and why? This is not the same Sherlock I watched with him before. So this isn't just a new series. It's a slightly different approach, or significantly different approach. So it's not been received very well, huh?
The things that I've seen on it, I haven't seen it myself. A lot of people were very disappointed.
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate because he and the other gentleman, whose name I can't think of, I thought they did a wonderful job with that series. That was something I binged watched. Yeah. Let's talk about reality TV. I'm just going to go on my own experience. I will be honest and say that I've watched probably as much as anybody has. In the past, I've made an intentional decision to sort of wean myself off of reality TV because I really feel like I really feel like networks are using reality TV as a means of saving money. Because paying actors costs more and buying shows costs more, whereas reality TV is very formulaic. It can be achieved much less expensively. Now, that said, I was a big fan of the first 7 seasons of American Idol. Haven't watched it in the last 3 or 4 years. Big fan of Top Chef. Stopped watching that. Project Runway. Stopped watching that. For me, the reality TV, I watched a few episodes of The Amazing Race. I never watched Big Brother. The stuff that was intentionally drama-laden and drama not in a good way, that just turned my stomach. I mean, I liked the cooking competitions because it was interesting to watch people. I found the common thread for me was watching people make something from nothing. So watching semi-trained or untrained cooking professionals, or in the case of Project Runway, designers take something from nothing and come up with this thing in the end that is lauded by professionals. It's very interesting to watch that process happen. But once you start introducing the drama, the intentional arguments and issues and backbiting and that, I have no interest in that whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And the more these shows relied on that device to get their ratings, the less I watched it. One I'm embarrassed to admit that I watch, but it's because I watched past tense. I did watch the Real Housewives of Atlanta for, I think, probably two seasons. I will probably watch anything with Atlanta in it just because it's Atlanta. But that, even that just got ridiculous. I'm like, what in the hell are you, what are you doing? And then I honestly realized, I'm like, you know, the more you watch this, the more they know, you know, the more you're supporting it. And if you want, you know, sitcoms and dramas and miniseries to come back the way they were before, you're going to have to vote with your feet. So I do. I did stop watching a lot of this stuff. Although I will occasionally watch a video online of, like, you know, someone who performed at the Voice, you know, music competition. But that's been my reality experience. A thing several years ago, not so much a thing now. What about you?
I never really got hooked up into all of that. It never really held an appeal to me, just simply because it, like you said, you know, the drama and the backbiting, and, you know, I had enough of that in my life. I didn't need anybody else's, you know? And so those kinds of shows really don't hold an appeal to me. Mm-hmm. Now, you put together a couple of thoughts on this. About, you know, the kinds of people that watch reality television. And let's see.
For some, is it, is it blatant voyeurism? Which I could see why people would say that it is. Blatant voyeurism matched with shameless exhibitionist.
Yeah, well, you know, those kinds of things are deeply rooted in our culture. I mean, the old saying that those people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Yeah.
You know, and
I do think there's something, there is some, what is the science of people who study mankind, so, and
sociology.
Yeah, sociology and the history side of it. There's not paleontologist, but there's another.
Humanities?
No, there's another profession out there that studies lifestyles and societies and cultures. I can't think of the word. Anyway, I think there's some merit if the shows weren't so contrived. I think that there's merit watching, you know, Meerkat Manor. You know?
Well, you remember when The Survivor, you know, first came out.
Yes.
You know, they're supposedly these people were on an island and they didn't have access to anything and food and that sort of thing. And then the secret was out that, you know, there was catering trucks and, you know, these people weren't starving. And kind of this, like you said, this contrived sort of scarcity mentality that would fuel these people to do terrible things to each other.
Yeah, I mean, I would watch something that was, and this is probably the voyeuristic side of things, watching something that was not contrived, not planned, not, you know, scripted even in some ways. Mm-hmm. But when it is, I can't, if it weren't quite as predictable, I guess I probably would be more interested. There's another thought that these people who are big fans of reality TV have some desire to be sort of part of the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure I get.
Yeah, well, you know, status, you know, being able to belong, you know, to that audience that is connected to a particular show.
It feels like in this article, another Psychology Today article, there's the people have some real sense of connection to the show or the winner. And that somehow they can sort of claim, as you said, that status because of their close affiliation. I guess I don't know if I've experienced that in any of the things I've watched. Like, I'm so invested. Maybe American Idol.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe American Idol, because you do have that, that you do have the connection with that show, unlike a lot of others, in that you will then go out and buy mm-hmm. that music. And you, you, by the way, you actually called to help vote that person through. So mm-hmm. maybe that is a good example of that kind of connection to the show. Yeah. It's a little hard for me to wrap my brain around, because I don't think it's just, you know, Soylent Green for the you know, for the mindless. I don't feel that way. I don't think people who watch reality shows are bad. I don't think it's just, I would rather, I think there's an entertainment value, some of it more so than others. I don't think people are stupid if they watch reality TV. I just would rather see actors do,
yeah,
you know, sitcoms and dramas and miniseries and stuff like that. And that's why I vote with my feet and try and watch as little of it as possible. But yeah, I don't know. I need to see if there is actually evidence of it being in, reality TV sort of receding a little bit, because it does feel like the networks are coming out with a lot of new sitcoms and a lot of new dramas.
Well, you know, with all of these other platforms, like, you know, Hulu and Amazon and Netflix creating their own content.
Yes.
I think the networks are going to have to kind of go back to the old playbook, because, well, you know, there are some people that are saying, you know, this is another golden age of television with the amount of really good, highly produced,
yeah,
quality storytelling that's happening in some of these other platforms.
I was going to say, and just none of it's happening in network television.
That's right. It's not. Yeah. It's not happening there. It's happening in all of these other disparate places. And it's hard because you have to have access to all of these different platforms,
yeah,
in order to kind of see the best of the best that's out there.
You're right. It does send a message to network television that this is the distance we will go to watch good TV. And by the way, you are all getting your asses kicked at every award show when the people, yeah, from Netflix and Hulu and Amazon are walking away with, you know, shows that were created specifically for them.
Well, and I think one of the reasons for that is that things like Amazon and Netflix and Hulu, they're willing to take a risk, and they're not relying on the old formulaic kinds of television like reality TV. It's a chance for more creative expression, taking a risk, or having a particular producer or director have a little bit more freedom when it comes to creating, yeah, their thing. Like the Wachowskis and Sense8 that is on Netflix. If you haven't seen that, that's interesting television.
Yeah.
And so you see this, you know, Paul Rubens, who is the, you know, Pee Wee Herman,
right,
is having his a full length next movie, his big holiday movie, coming out on Netflix after its premiere on March, I think it's the 6th.
Yeah.
And it's totally going to Netflix, and you're going to see more and more of this. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, great martial arts film,
yeah, yeah,
from years ago. Well, guess what? They're making a sequel. Number 2 is coming out. And where is it going to be? It's going to be on Netflix. It's not going to be in the theaters. It's not going to be on some network somewhere. It's on Netflix.
I didn't know that was a thing. I mean, obviously, I've seen the House of Cards and other things that are, mm-hmm, series that are created just for Netflix. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize movies being released, yeah, directly. I didn't know that was a thing. Wow, that's pretty cool.
I think that sort of thing is just coming to light.
Yeah.
You know, I think the series, independently produced series that end up on platforms like Netflix and Amazon, you know, they know that that works. So now they're going to try their hand at movies. And I think it's really an exciting time.
Well, it's a little off topic, but, you know, movie theaters and Hollywood have their own set of challenges, not unlike television broadcast. I think theaters are pointless. I've got a 60-inch TV, and I can get largely the same dramatic effect from any movie theater that I want, you know, here, minus the ear-busting volume that they seem to play the movies at.
You know, I still enjoy seeing a movie in the theater, but the audience behavior is just so bad that I would rather have the option of getting it at home.
For a lot of people, the 3D and the IMAX are a big draw for them, but, you know, I'm blind.
I'm kind of over that.
It seems like it was just overdone, and in some instances, for no real good reason. But I'm blind in my left eye, so I don't really get the 3D thing. I did go to a movie. Gosh, what was it? It's probably in the last Avengers movie about a year or so ago, and it was 3D, and I could watch the movie, but it didn't really
enhance it.
Yeah, it didn't enhance it at all. I just saw Deadpool last weekend with some friends, and we went to a theater that was like a VIP lounge. It was connected to a bar. We didn't get there early enough to order food, but, you know, enormous recliner chairs with this, you know, swivel tabletop, and, you know, very spacious. You could recline back, and there was still plenty of room for people to walk around. And I was like, wow, the distance they've gone to attract and retain, you know, the movie theater going fan is crazy. And, you know, and I was like, oh, that's nice, but I'm probably, you know, I wanted to see Deadpool. I was invited to see Deadpool, but generally speaking, there's very few movies, almost none, that I can't wait to see, you know, on iTunes.
Exactly.
I'm so fickle. Oh, my goodness. Mark, we're going to have to save binge watching for the next show.
All right. We can do that. I know I've been doing a lot of that lately, so we've got plenty to talk about.
We'll catch up on binge watching after we finish binge watching some things and get right back to you. Well, folks, thanks for listening. Hope this has been an interesting conversation. As always, we'd be curious to hear what you have to say about why certain genres, you know, are of interest to you. I intentionally did not choose fantasy or comic or sci-fi because I don't know enough about those genres to half of the jokes in Deadpool went straight over my head. So, I knew why they were funny. I mean, I knew that they were funny. I wasn't sure in some instances why they were funny, but no. Yeah, so let us know what you're watching and why you're watching it. Reach out and let us know, and we'll talk to you soon. Mark, have a great day.
You too, George. Until next time, take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of The North and South of Things. More information available at northandsouthofthings.com. Follow Mark on Twitter at Laughing Buddha. That's LaffingBuddha. And George at George in Atlanta. Our podcast theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.